Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. So just first of all, an introduction for how it's going to be working the next couple of weeks. This week I'm here, that's why I'm standing right in front of you. Next week, Emir to Hashem, I'm on vacation, so I will not be here. I'm looking more forward to my vacation than I am to being here, hence I will not be giving a shiur next week. I will be away. Then the week after that, I will be back. That is like the week of August the 20-something. That's week of August the 19th, right?
Tuesday is the 21st.
Okay, so the week of the so I'll be here the 21st, and Mir Tashem, I'll give a share the 21st. Whether or not I'll give a share on the 28th depends on how far we get. My last day as rabbi here is August 31st. If I finish up what I want to do on the 21st, so we won't have shiur on the 28th. If not, we will have shiur. But that's basically the story. Okay? We have been talking this summer about Halachic Men Season 5, which are like the Rishonim, who are the basis of the Halacha as we know it. And we spoke about the Rif, and we spoke about the Rush. And then we spent a nice chunk of time talking about the Rambam. And the Rambam is this fascinating figure. The Rambam, on the one hand, is a major halachic figure. The Rambam is a philosopher. The Rambam codified his halacha in an unusual way. And the Rambam is fascinating. And the amazing thing about the Rambam is that the Rambam's book was accepted, but not accepted. And in some ways, the accepted but not accepted is what makes you accepted. Gotcha?
Not quite.
Let me explain. Okay, basically, if people are willing to oppose you, and people are willing to criticize you, and people are willing to say, you know what, you're really wrong, that means that you made it to the table, you're part of the conversation enough that people will say you're wrong.
They're not ignoring you.
They're not ignoring you. If they are not goyres you, to use a yeshivish term, if they ignore you, if they make believe you don't exist, or if in fact you really don't exist in their eyes, so then you are not really part of the halachic process. The fact that the Rambam was subject to criticism, in some ways, is what made the Rambam stick. And I say the same thing about the Shulchan Aruch. Right, that the amazing thing about the Shulchan Aruch as a book of halacha is that if not for the Shach, who was a real opponent of the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch wouldn't have made it. Because the Shulchan Aruch had these glosses that are written. The Rambam is an opponent of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach's an opponent of the Rabbi Yosef Kar. The Shach's an opponent. And that's what made the Shulchan Aruch make it. And to some extent, the argument goes that the Rambam became a really accepted halachic work because of the glosses on the Rambam, because of the Ravid, for lack of a better term.
The Ravid, yeah.
Now, here's the thing, though. Whether or not this is true is debatable. Because, you see, in a time when books didn't travel so quickly, today you put a book and you send an email, and it goes everywhere in a second. In their times, books didn't travel so easily. So you have to realize that the Rambam was already accepted in order to make it to the Ravid. Right? The Rambam is written in where? Where is he? Well, he's in Spain, then he's in Northern Africa, he's in Egypt, right? A little bit in Eretz Yisrael. For that book to make it to southern France, where the Ravid lived, means that there was already Jews in southern France who were interested in that book.
Didn't it also make it all the way to Yemen?
It made it to Yemen. It made it to Yemen before southern France. We know that the Rambam made it to southern France. It made it to Provence in the year 1190-1193. That's when the Rambam got to Provence. The Ravid died in the year 1197. That means you have an old man who gets a new book, who decides to write down some notes on this new book, and that, right, that in some ways, to argue that that's what made the Rambam accepted is ignoring the fact that the Rambam had to have been accepted in order to get into the hands of this old man. Right? That's sort of the issue we're discussing. Okay, so let's just look very quickly. The only source I gave for you tonight is the Heiliger Wikipedia. Ravid is born 1125 or 1127. He dies on November 1198. Okay, we know when he died. We don't know when he's born. The big work on the Ravid is Professor Isidore Twersky of Harvard. He wrote a book called Ravid of Paskiers, very catchy title. And Professor Twersky, in his book, maintained that, oh yeah, the Ravid was born in when? Well, some say he was born in 1115, some say he's born in 1125, some split the difference at 1120. We don't really know when the Ravid was born. We have no idea, but Wikipedia says 1125 or 1127. We'll trust Wikipedia, we'll take it at face value. He dies in 1198. The Ravid is the son-in-law of someone else named Ravid. And this gets complicated. There are three people in Jewish history known as Ravid. And to simplify matters, we call them Ravid 1, Ravid 2, and Ravid 3. Right? So Ravid 1 is the... Adam 1, Adam 2. Where's Adam 3? I don't know. But Ravid 1 is Rav Avram Ab Bezdin, who is the Rav, the head of the Bezdin in Narvon. His daughter marries Rabbi Avram ben David, who's known as the Ravid. Okay? As the Ravid, who's Ravid 2. There's a third Ravid, Ravid 3, who's a historian. So our Ravid is Ravid the 2. Now here's the thing. Apparently, Rabbi Avram Ab Bezdin of Narvon, his daughter is quite the catch. So there are two fellows, the Ravid and the Baal Hamor, Reb Zrachya Halevi. And they both wanted to marry her. And they're chavrusas, and they're learning by the Rebbe, and they're both fighting about who's going to marry her. And the Ravid won, and he married her. And the Baal Hamor was not happy. And this led to a lifelong dispute between the Ravid and the Baal Hamor, and they write some of the most intense insults in Judaism at each other. Domani she'ein lo moach b'kod kodo. I think this guy has no gray matter up in his cranium. This guy don't know what he's doing. He is smoking. Right? Like, the insults go back and forth. Now, the amazing thing is, one second, Gila, occasionally, or on a few occasions, the Ravid will say, you know what, my chavrusa, the Bahamar was right. However, gonofu me'iti, the one good idea that he had was really my idea. Right? So this is kind of an amazing thing that the Ravid, and the Ravid lived his life arguing with people. Right? And there is a Provençal tradition. The people in Provence at this time like to argue. And they write books arguing on other books. So the Ravid's not the only one who's doing this. But the fight between the Ravid and the Bahamar was quite a fight. Hi, Gila.
How did Ravid end up being the one to marry?
Oh, I don't know. Apparently, she liked him, he liked her more. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That detail, we don't know, but we know they both...
This is the important stuff.
But that's the important stuff. You're right. I'm sorry.
If I had a happy marriage, I mean, at least he'd have a... Why was he... I mean, he was still upset, right?
They are fighting each other for years. Now, again, if I'd be really frum, I would say that this is all a shem shamayim and they want to know Torah, but whatever. There's actually, in the back of the Sefer Chafetz Chaim on Lashon Hara, he reproduces a tshuva of the Chavos Ya'ir, who asks the question, how come sometimes people in the Gemara disagree with each other? You know, they're not supposed to. They're supposed to be nice. We expect rabbis to be nice, and like, what's going on over here? So Chafetz Chaim has like a whole discussion of this. Rumor has it that Rav Kook, Zichron Levracha, used to say that the one joke in Shas is Tamidei Chachamim Marvim Shalom Ba'olam. But we'll leave it like that. Okay. I don't believe the Rav Kook ever said that, though. Okay. So now, the Ravid ends up living in a town called Paskiers, which is the current-day town of Vauvert. Okay, we'll come back to it. I'm reading Family Origins and Life. Okay, nice. The Ravid had a grandfather's Talmud Chacham. He lived in Paskiers, which is a current town of Vauvert. In one of the sources that we'll discuss tonight, Rabbi Buchwald. Rabbi Buchwald is a Rabbi Ephraim Buchwald is not of Lincoln Square. This is Rabbi Ephraim Buchwald, who is a Dayan and a Rosh Kollel in Eretz Yisrael, who put out an edition of the Ravid with masterful footnotes, put an edition of the Sefer Bali HaNefesh of the Ravid. His name is also Ephraim Buchwald, not the one that you know, who would guess. So Rabbi Buchwald writes that, you know, everyone made a big deal about the Rambam's 800th whatever, and for the Ravid's 800th whatever, I wrote to the mayor of Vauvert, France, to say, why don't you do a big event in your town in honor of the most famous person ever from Vauvert, France, from Pasquier's? And basically the mayor wrote back something to the effect of, who the heck are you? Who is Ravid? What are you talking about? That type of, again, I'm adding some color to what he writes about. But the basic history of the Ravid is as follows. The Ravid is the classic Provençal scholar, so much so, we don't know of much in Provence before the Ravid. Let me explain. Jews have been living in the southern France since the 3rd or 4th century. That's a long time. The Ravid is like 12th century. We know that the Ravid had Rebbeim who lived in Provence. We know their names. There is a Reb Meshulam, who's the Ravid's Rebbe. The Ravid had another Rebbe. This is basically what we know, but we don't know of any Talmidei Chachamim in Provence before the generation before the Ravid. Also, Kabbalah is developed in Provence the generation after the Ravid. And the first big mikubal that we're aware of is the Ravid's son, Reb Yitzchak. No? Not Reb Yitzchak Luria. The Arizal is way later, but the first big mikubal that we know, the world of Kabbalah develops in Provence. Now, there's a whole school, and Wikipedia writes at this at length, which part I didn't quote. There's a whole school that the Ravid himself was a mikubal, and in a few places the Ravid writes Hofia Ruach HaKodesh Bebeis Midrashenu, stuff like that. Was that like an expression? Or what did he really mean, that there's like a heavenly spirit that came to Beis Midrash? We don't know. But the Ravid is a larger than life figure. The Ravid is the greatest commentator in Provence, meaning to say that when the Me'iri is 150 years after the Ravid, when the Me'iri writes in his Beis HaBechira, and he gives names for all the Rishonim, so the Gedolei HaMefarshim, the greatest commentator is not Rashi, but the Ravid. In Me'iri world, the Ravid is the greatest commentary on Shas. And the Ravid's commentary on Shas didn't make it to us. The Ravid's commentary on Shas, we have it on Maseches Bava Kamma, we have it on Avodah Zarah, we don't have it in other places. We don't know much about the Ravid's commentary on Shas. We could try to reconstruct it from works that quote it, but we don't really have it. So the Ravid, on the one hand, is a great commentator. The Ravid is also not just a great commentator, but the Ravid is a commentator on underprivileged texts. How many of you ever read the Sifrei, the Midrash Halacha? Anyone? Show of hands.
I've heard of it.
Okay, that's good. That's better than many people, right? Midrash Halacha isn't studied. The Ravid wrote commentary on Midrash Halacha. Mishnayos Idios. The Ravid wrote a commentary on Mishnayos Idios. This is not a popular work. The Ravid is writing commentaries on unpopular works, underprivileged texts.
Why did he do that?
Why did he do that? Great question. So, we'll discuss that. But Dr. Soloveitchik, That's the Salvechik wrote a lot about the Ra'ivid. So he has what's called the Ra'ivid of Paskier as a programmatic essay, which was published in a festschrift in honor of Professor Jacob Katz. Dr. Salvechik's argument is that the Ra'ivid was a really smart guy, and the Ra'ivid was really bored, and he wanted challenges. Mm-hmm. So you take a book that no one ever read before, and you write a commentary on the book that no one ever read before, and that's a good challenge. That's his take. Maybe we'll discuss his take in greater detail in a few minutes. But basically, the Ra'ivid here, if you look under literary works, the Ra'ivid is a prolific author. He answers hundreds of questions. Right? He wrote compendiums on rabbinical law. A chronicle called Sefer HaKabbalah L'Ra'ivid. Now, this is a mistake. The Sefer HaKabbalah L'Ra'ivid is written by Ra'ivid 3, not by Ra'ivid 2. Again, someone... Do any of you... My kids are like Wikipedia editors. They like do this for fun. You know, my daughter... My daughter Chava Geula, if you want, I could give you this assignment. Go to the Wikipedia page and say that the Sefer Kabbalah is not really authored by the Ra'ivid. The Ra'ivid wrote halachic monographs. The Ra'ivid wrote books on specific areas of halacha. The most popular of these is called the Sefer Balei HaNefesh of the Ra'ivid, which deals with the laws of Nida and Mikvaos, which concludes, by the way, with a beautiful essay about the beauty of sexuality in Judaism that is extremely unusual for its time, but it's there. The only thing is, that one chapter might not be from the right. That one chapter might be, but it's printed with it, whatever it is.
Is it translated?
It is translated, yeah.
Another mistake here. Yeah, you said that he only wrote on certain works of the Gemara.
Okay, we'll get there.
It says here that,
so we have the Ra'ivid only on a few Masechtos. The argument goes that the Ra'ivid wrote on all of Shas, and we're just missing it. We don't have it.
Okay.
There's some list that Professor Tversky gives of that there are 30 different Masechtos that we can find comments of the Ra'ivid. Again, I don't know. There are a few halachic monographs that the Ra'ivid has. We mentioned the Sefer Balei HaNefesh. Balei HaNefesh is the classic in Hilchos Nida. The Balei HaNefesh begins with like all the details of Nida. He doesn't speak in brig rules. The Rambam writes in first rules, like the Dinam D'Oraisa and Dinam D'Rabbanan, brings down. The Ra'ivid just says, okay, Nida's bad, avoid Nida, don't do X, Y, and Z. Right? That's the way the Ra'ivid begins. Balei HaNefesh is a classic on Nida. The Ra'ivid has a sefer on Hilchos Lulav. There's a few monographs. There's a school of thought that the Ra'ivid actually wrote a complete work on all of halacha, similar to what the Rambam did, but we're missing part of it. Or all of it, besides these two or three monographs that we have.
What do they think happened to it?
They got lost. Again, we're going to sit on Tisha B'Av on the floor. We're going to talk about the burning of the Talmud and burning of a lot of books. There are lots of books that we know existed that were burned. Right? We don't know. I see the smirk.
It kills me so much. There's so much that's just not there.
Right. There is. We are missing an awful lot. Okay, now. The Ra'ivid is described by many, including by Wikipedia, as the Baal HaSagot, as the great critic. Because the Ra'ivid wrote critical remarks on the Rif, on the Bahamar, and on the Rambam. And traditionally, the thing that makes the Ra'ivid famous is his criticisms. So when you look at the section Attitude as a Critic, the tone he employs is characteristic of his attitude. Basically, the Rif gets respect, right? He's the son whose brilliant rays are either dazzling. Rabbeinu Zrachya Halevi, he's harsh and hostile. He doesn't even quote any of the good lines, right? Etc., etc., etc. And the Rambam, the Ra'ivid, also really rips to shreds often. Okay, that's the basic story. Now, There is a whole history of Ravid scholarship, which I'd like to, again, tonight I apologize if I'm not really teaching Torah, if this is more about it than it, but we're doing the best we can. The first work we mentioned on the Ravid, the first modern work, is Professor Isidore Twersky, Rav Soloveitchik's son-in-law. He wrote a book called Ravid of Past Years. Professor Twersky's take on the Ravid is as follows. He says the Ravid is not really a commentator on Shas. The Ravid's place in history is that he wrote notes, criticisms of the Rambam. That's the Ravid's place in history. The fact that all of his commentary on Shas is missing shows that that's not so essential to who he is. He's not identified historically with any encompassing works, even if he wrote complete works on halacha, etc. That's not what he's known. In the study of Jewish law, it's inconceivable without the Mishnah Torah. The study of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam is inconceivable without the Ravid strictures. As a matter of fact, ever since the Constantinople edition of 1509, Ravid Hasagot have been printed in all subsequent standard editions accompanied by Maimonides' text. Okay, basically, what Professor Twersky is arguing is that the Ravid is known as the critic on the Rambam. Proof in the pudding, every edition of the Rambam printed, since Sansino printed the Rambam in 1509, has the Ravid on the side. Great. Now, here's the thing. If you have an academic family, so Shabbos table conversations might be fun, and they could be exciting, but when those conversations end up getting out into the world, and getting out into journals, you end up in weird places. So Professor Twersky's brother-in-law is... Professor Twersky married Atara Soloveitchik. Chaim Soloveitchik is his brother-in-law. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is his brother-in-law. Okay? Good. So far so good. We got the whole family? Chaim Soloveitchik writes Ravid of Past Years, a programmatic essay, which is basically a full-length review of his brother-in-law's books, ripping it to shreds.
Nice.
Even though his brother-in-law thanks him at the beginning of his book. I want to thank Chaim Soloveitchik for reading my manuscript. Well, apparently Chaim read the manuscript. And he disagreed with it, and he published his disagreement later on. Okay, so now, Chaim Soloveitchik argues that the Ravid as the critic of the Rambam is inconsequential halachically. If you take the books of the Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ramban, and they quote a Ravid, the Ravid who they are quoting is inevitably from the Ravid's commentary on Shas, not from the Ravid on the Rambam. And yes, every printed edition since the Sansino 1509 has had the Ravid on it. But when we look at the manuscripts, and Dr. Salvi, I don't know how much time he spent on this. He uncovered 564 different manuscripts of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. Of those 564, only 11 of them have the Ravid. What does that mean? I haven't got the foggiest idea what it means. It probably means that in different parts of the world, you see, like, manuscripts are only viable if you know where they're coming from, no? So probably in certain parts of the world, the Ravid made it. Other parts of the world, he didn't make it. But Professor Soloveitchik argues as follows. The Ravid, according to Professor Soloveitchik, is an old man who's a big Talmud Chacham, who's really bored. And he gets his hand on this really good work called the Rambam. And he says, oh my gosh, I gotta jot down some notes on this really good book. And you know what? I'm going to jot down these notes to show that this really good book maybe ain't as good as people think it is. And you could argue here, you could argue there. He's not going through the Rambam systematically. There are many times that we know the Ravid disagrees with the Rambam from the Ravid's other writings, but the Ravid doesn't write that he's disagreeing with the Rambam because he's just jotting down some notes. Why he's jotting the notes? Well, there's one historical school of thought that the Ravid wanted the Rambam not to become an accepted work. You see, the Rambam wanted his work to be the only book that you had to study besides Tanakh, so that you'd have more time to study philosophy, like we spoke about last week. Well, the Ravid didn't like no philosophy. Right? I don't like no philosophy. The rabbi said he's spoken like, you know, the true, right? The true believer. So the rabbi said, you know what? I'm going to show you that this book ain't all that you think it is. And you can't just study this book. If you study this book, you'll be making mistakes here, there, and the other place. And I'll just jot down a few different mistakes he's making. That's Dr. Soloveitchik's version of the Ravid. He writes that, unfortunately, the commentaries of the Ravid on Shas were eclipsed because Rashi was so awesome and amazing. And Rashi took over the world. Even though Rashi's before the Ravid, but the Ravid never really had a chance. Because Rashi is amazing, and no need for a Ravid's commentary. So, this is the way things stood, that Professor Tversky has his book, and Dr. Soloveitchik argues that the Ravid isn't, should not be known as someone who has criticism of the Rambam. Moreover, Professor Soloveitchik argues that the Ravid's job, or the Ravid's main accomplishment, is that he removed the Gaonim from the halachic conversation. We spoke about the Gaonim way back when we began the Rif. And the Gaonim are these, a group of Jews, big Talmid Chachamim, Sura, Pompadisa, in Bavel, in Babylonia, right? And they are giving all of Torah knowledge. Their tshuvos are so important, so well accepted. And the Gaonim play no sort of role in the Ravid. And after the Ravid, the Gaonim don't play a role anymore. And says Professor Soloveitchik, the contribution of the Ravid is to remove the Gaonim from halachic discourse. Now, the third point that Professor Soloveitchik makes is by giving three specific examples of cases where the Ravid paskins halacha based on the dominant society around him and how that impacted on the world that he saw it and how that influenced his halachic rating. That's Professor Soloveitchik's argument. And everything was silent between around the year 1980 and the year 2004 when the Torah Umada Journal publishes a response to Professor Soloveitchik's article. This response, 25 years after the article is written, right, by this Rabbi Ephraim Buchwald, who himself put out this edition of the Ravid that we spoke about before. He put out that edition of the Ravid on the Bali HaNefesh.
Which issue of Torah Mada
is it? This is Torah Mada, volume 12 and volume 14. Those are the two volumes we'll be talking about tonight. So, Rabbi Buchwald basically is willing to accept Professor Soloveitchik's contention that the Ravid main contribution is commentary on Shas, rather than his notes on the Rambam. Okay, great. However, Professor Soloveitchik's argument that the Ravid was knocking the Gaonim off of the pedestal, says Rabbi Buchwald, that can't be true. Because you can only say someone is arguing with the Gaonim, someone is pushing the Gaonim aside, if he knows the Gaonim and deliberately is pushing them aside. If you had no knowledge that this source comes from the Gaonim, you can't be pushing it aside. Point two, sometimes writers quote things without attributing it. Now, we have a term for that. It's called plagiarism. But in the rabbinic discourse, plagiarism is not as bitter thing, right? What's the proof? If you want Mashiach to come, then you quote the person who said it. But if you don't quote the person who said it, so Mashiach might not come based on what you're doing, but you're not necessarily, like, plagiarism is like the worst aveira in academia. Is that correct?
Pretty much.
It's pretty bad. I mean, it could be that killing your professor is worth it. Is worse. It's about focus on post-game.
It's worth it for you.
What? What did I?
I thought you said worth it for a second.
Oh boy. So basically, Rabbi Buchwald argues that, you know what, both premises of Professor Soloveitchik are very debatable, and I don't know if the Ravid is really discounting the Gaonim. He goes through some Ravids very carefully. He says, you know what, I took these 80 pages of the Ravid and I found 60 citations from the Gaonim, even though they're not quoted by name. So, like, the amount of time it takes to do this type of work, right, is kind of amazing. Here, should I read you a section? For a relevant comparison, we can focus on Maseches Avodah Zarah, where we have the text of the Ravid and of the Ravid's Rebbe, the Sefer HaEshkol. Significantly, in the Eshkol, I found 6 explicit citations of Gaonic commentaries. It's supposed to be that the Eshkol quotes the Gaonim and the Ravid knocks out. So he writes, in the Eshkol, I find 6 citations of Gaonic commentaries plus 1 anonymous citation within 43 pages. Most of the commentary in the Eshkol is not Gaonic. Okay, great. Rabbi Avraham, the Gaonic has cited many responsa, blah, blah, it's like it goes on forever. In Ravid's commentary, by contrast, I found 8 citations besides 19 anonymous references. Right? So what he's basically saying is that, Professor Soloveitchik, you have this argument that the Ravid is dispensing with the Gaonim. It's not true. He's not doing that. Now, Professor Soloveitchik also had the third argument about how the Ravid is using current issues in the world to influence Psak Halacha. And Rabbi Buchwald says, hey dear, you're totally off base. You misread all those sources. Then Torah Modern Journal, Volume 14, Chaim Soloveitchik responds. And the Chaim Soloveitchik response is frightening. So he first writes,
here he parallels that they're all arguing with each other, and the Ravid was busy arguing with his chavruta.
It's kind of amazing that the beauty of Torah is that argument never ceases, right? So Professor Soloveitchik says, you know what, Rabbi Buchwald has 2 major criticisms. One is the Gaonim thing, and then his second criticism is about the second aspect of my article that has awakened his wrath, is his view that I contended that some of Ravid's doctrines were forged in part in responses to contemporary problems, to historical conditions of his time. And though he is courteous enough not to say so explicitly, this maxim of attributing Ravid tendencies best associated with Reform or Conservative Judaism. This is what Chaim Soloveitchik is interpreting as Rabbi Buchwald's motivation. And then Professor Soloveitchik goes and he responds at length to this third aspect, the aspect of, you know what, do minhagim influence Psak Halacha? And Professor Soloveitchik says something which is very compelling, I think. You know, minhag means different things in different areas of halacha.
Yeah.
In Shulchan Aruch Orechayim, minhag is, you know what, do we say tachanun or we don't say tachanun? In Yeridaya, minhag is, how many days of nida do you keep? If the animal is shechted this way, is it kosher? Is it not kosher? We have minhagim. But there are also minhagim and choshen mishpat. And minhag and choshen mishpat means something very different than minhag and orechayim and Yeridaya. In choshen mishpat, in monetary law, minhag means the way people do stuff outside. So don't tell me it's Reform Judaism to say that we are looking at the outside world and we're saying that's binding halacha. Of course we do that. That's called dina d'malchus dina. That is because whenever I do business, I'm doing business based on why people do business at that time. So here's the interesting summary. And I know I'm not really teaching Torah tonight. I'm just summarizing a bunch of articles, but I find this stuff interesting and whatever. So, yeah. Professor Tversky felt that the Ravid is primarily a critic of the Rambam. Professor Soloveitchik says, no way, that's not who the Ravid was. The Ravid is primarily a commentator on Shas. His criticism on the Rambam is done, like, backhanded at the end of his life. Great. Professor Soloveitchik then went on and had 2 points about the Ravid. 1, that the Ravid is undercutting the Gaonim. 2, that the Ravid is being influenced by the outside world. In terms of Ravid undercutting the Gaonim, Professor Soloveitchik does not respond to that at all. Meaning, Professor or Rabbi Buchwald's numerical argument of how many times the Gaonim are quoted, that stands. But the last point, that's a point that he responds to. So this is basically some of the ideas I wanted to mention tonight. Just one last point which I didn't mention is as follows. Professor Sat, we mentioned that the Ravid focuses on underprivileged texts, right? He writes a commentary on Mishnayos Idios, on the Sifrei. Underprivileged texts. Why is that? So Professor Salvation has the following argument. Since the Ravid is dispensing with the Gaonim, that means he has no tradition preceding him. He writes whatever he wants to write, based on the way he sees things. If that's the case, I could take any text and write it. You see, usually I'm scared to write because I have to read all the stuff before me. But if I'm the Ravid, I couldn't care less what came before me, so I'll write whatever I want. That's Professor Soloveitchik's argument. I don't know, it's interesting, but I don't know how cogent it is. We'll let you think about it, and we should have a good night. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.